Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. A gloomy tone for us, I suppose, because the hopes of an England revival were dashed in the space of about three overs this morning at the Gabba when Cameron Green took the wicket of Joe Root and also, of course, Milan. So the two overnight batsmen gone within the space of about 20 minutes. And then it was just almost a procession, really, Simon. What's the mood like amongst your English contingent of commentators and how did you sum up the day?
Well, first question, I think a sense of realism. I think everyone felt that Australia was still in a very good position despite England's excellent play, excellent batting on the third day. Story of the day was England needed to bat through the first 10 overs and a bit of the new ball, possibly only lose one wicket to give themselves a chance. They lost three wickets before the second new ball and then two wickets quite soon after Australia had taken the new ball, and there was no way back. I think once Milan went, I think it was a really big psychological blow. Nathan Lyon took his 400th test wicket, so he was on a high, and he helped run through England. Took 4 for 21 today from 10 overs. Innocuous, not quite innocuous so far, but he was wicketless. England had kept him at bay, but he was right back in the game. And actually, it was Lyon and Cameron Green today who did most of the damage. They shared six wickets between them, and no one really from England resisted for very long. And the game was all over 20 minutes after lunch, with Robinson taking the wicket of Carey, who was bumped up the order with Warner injured. So England thumped, really. Another tale of woe at the Gabba. It's a familiar story. We've talked about it a lot in the build-up. Don't lose at Brisbane, but actually what's happened is England have been thumped again. Another heavy defeat at the Gabba.
And it mainly kind of justified our sort of pre-match predictions. Although when we went to the specifics, I think from yesterday's predictions, we both got the idea, I think, that England were going to lose. You were quite evasive about the outcome of the day in terms of, you know, who was actually winning, whether Australia would actually win. Because you said, end of the day's play, 30 for none, Australia. But you didn't actually really elaborate on whether that meant they were chasing a target or just 30 for none overnight. Whereas I said, Australia 80 for three, won by seven wickets. So I think I'd have to say, I give you the points because you did say 30 for none. I mean, you were typically kind of quite the fence city in that you didn't really, that we weren't that specific about what the outcome of the match actually was, but you were closer 30 for none Australia than I was. So I'll give you a point for that.
Well, that's very generous. So I take a 1-0 lead into the Adelaide Test match. So I've won one day. The other days we were all square in this Test match. Obviously, we didn't predict the first day because you don't know who's batting first. So it's pointless to try and predict the first day without knowing, you know, who is actually taking first strike. That's very generous of you. Yeah, I did say the closer play score would be 30 for no wicket Australia, and they were 20 for one. Actually, I thought at one stage it was going to be 20 for no wicket, but Carey nicked off against Robinson, caught behind by Butler. For nine, you were guilty of being too specific, Yoz. But I mean, all we had to say was what, you know, who was going to be batting and what was going to be the score. So, but you know, but fair play to you. Actually, you called it as well. Really, you know, you said you thought the game would be done in 4 days. Australia winning by 7 wickets, and it you know, for all the optimism of the third day and that Root and Milan partnership, you know, you have to sort of accept the cold hard realism of it, that England have a fragile batting lineup, Australia have a pretty good bowling lineup, and you know, and it's a Gabba pitch, and it's they're unfamiliar conditions, and you know, England, you felt the most likely outcome was that they were going to succumb, and they did rather tamely, actually.
And one prediction that we did get right was that the first 10 overs prior to the second new ball were going to be vital. And if England could get through those first 10 overs and be there, Root and Milan intact when the second new ball was taken, that would give England at least a hope of getting a sort of total of around 400. Of course, not only did Root and Milan depart in those first 10 overs, but they lost Ollie Pope as well. So it was three men out in that first 10 overs, and that really just left the, obviously, Butler and Stokes, good players, but against the second new ball, they were always going to struggle on a fourth day pitch against that high calibre of attack, and that's exactly how it proved. So my hopes of England getting 350 were totally dashed, and they didn't even make 300 in the end. I mean, one point you make there, that essentially England have a fragile batting lineup and Australia have a very potent bowling lineup, kind of makes me think, well, winning the toss and batting first, which is what obviously Joe Root did, was a risk. I'm not necessarily saying he had any other option, because, you know, history tells you that putting teams in at the Gabba is dangerous. And also, you know, there wasn't a massive amount of evidence to suggest that you should field first, except that it had been raining quite a bit in Brisbane. There was a lot of green in the pitch. So I guess from the sort of initial entrails, you could say, yeah, put them in. But the main reason for me doing that would be our strength, England's strength, is bowling and not batting. So let's play to our strengths. But then they didn't pick Stuart Broad, who would have been a big asset if England had bowled first. So I don't know. I mean, it's easy to blame Root for these decisions in hindsight. I certainly think it was a massive mistake not to play Broad. Whether it was a massive mistake to bat first, you know, maybe it was.
Let's hear from Joe Root, actually, because he spoke at the press conference afterwards. We're going to hear two little bits from him, two extracts from his press conference. He is going to address in a moment the issue of the toss and the team selection. But first up, just on today's play, you know, he was asked about the importance of getting through those first 10 overs and then getting to the new ball and beyond without too much damage. This is what he had to say about what England came up with today.
Yeah, it was frustrating. We obviously knew how important that first hour was in particular. You know, we knew it was going to nip around a bit again, and there was a bit of that extra bit of bounce and zip with it being a little bit harder. So it was really important that we got there unscathed, and unfortunately losing those three wickets ahead of that was bitterly disappointing, because we had put a lot of good work in last night. We built that big partnership, and you know, it was really on me and David to make the most of that opportunity this morning. Credit to Australia, they put ball in good areas. Now, it can be frustrating sometimes. You feel like you've played extremely well and you make one mistake and you know, you're back on your way. So they're the harsh lessons that we've learned throughout this Test match. Credit to Australia, taking every chance that's come their way. And you know, I can't say the same about ourselves. So I look back at this morning with a little bit of disappointment, but ultimately, when you're 40 for four in the first innings, it's very difficult to get back into the game. And when you create as many chances as we did with the ball and not take them, it's very difficult to look back at just this morning and think that that's where the game was lost for us.
Interesting from Root there, talking about Australia taking their chances and England not taking their chances. Well, there were chances for England. I mean, the main one, of course, was the fact that David Warner was dropped by Rory Burns. That felt like a big moment. We identified that, of course, in one of our earlier podcasts. But the other drop catches were when most of the damage was done, to be honest. Butler dropped a difficult chance. Hamid dropped a difficult chance. There were, I suppose what he was possibly referring to was a couple of run-out opportunities as well, one against Steve Smith, although he didn't last much longer, and one against David Warner. Warner was on 60 when Hamid missed the stumps from close in, and Warner went on to make 94. So, yeah, there were opportunities, but it wasn't as though there were bags and bags of opportunities. But Australia did grab everything. I mean, they were excellent in the field. They really were. Their catching was excellent. OK, so that was Root on today's play. What about Root on team selection and toss decision?
I think batting first was the right decision. If you look at how the wickets unfolded, I think, as I say, being 40 for four makes it not look the case. And credit for Australia, exploited those conditions a little bit, but it did quicken up. And we showed that we could create chances that second day. And as you saw today, it didn't start misbehaving a little bit more. You know, you look at getting 250 even in that first innings, and the game looks very different altogether. Now, I look back at the toss, and I think I'd have done the same thing. I think speaking to Pat, he would have done the same thing as well. He'd have batted first. So, you know, I'm not too worried about that. In terms of selection, I wanted a balanced attack, wanted to be able to change the momentum of the game, and we went with the spinner. And credit to Australia, they took on Leachy. He had to bowl on that wicket at his worst. You know, I felt facing Nathan last night, you know, as quality as he is, it felt like you could score quite freely off him and you could rotate off him on that surface. And probably actually put a lot of that on myself, being slightly too aggressive with his fields early on, let him get into the series and get into the game, and made it very difficult for him from that point onwards. So probably more on my shoulders there and how I managed him, rather than looking at the selection of how we went about things.
So absolutely no backtracking at all from Joe Root. We got the decision right on the toss. You know, he says Australia would have batted first as well. And as for the team selection, we wanted a balanced side. So we played Jack Leach, and he actually blamed himself. He said, you know, I perhaps set a fields that were a bit too attacking for Jack Leach at the start. But, I mean, it was obvious that Australia were going to come at Leach, and they did. I think we all sensed that was going to happen. You know, as we were commentating, watching the game, here's Leach, what's Australia's approach going to be? And they attacked him, and they did. They just took him down. And, you know, I mean, we've talked about it a bit. I would have played five seamers and Joe Root to bowl on that surface. I just felt that would be the way to go. And, you know, I mean, actually, Jonathan Agnew made a really good point. He's a former tall pace bowler that played for England. He said, you know, Broad would have been useful on the first morning, and, you know, he actually would have been useful on an uneven pitch as well at the back end of the game. And so play broad over Leach. That's what I would have done. England didn't do it. They wanted a balanced attack. Of course, the other thing that's happened, you know, subsequently, is that England have been fined 100% of their match fee and docked 5 World Test Championship points for a slow over rate. And of course, you having a spinner in your side, it should mitigate against that. But, you know, so 5 seamers, you know, doesn't help with your over rate, does it? That, you know, that's one thing to say. But actually, you know, you've got to get the match tactics right first up. And you can, you know, if you with a bit of drive, you can get through your overs. They're going to have to, in fact.
Yeah, obviously it's a sort of adding insult to injury at the end there with that fine. But I guess, you know, when we look at it in the sort of raw light of day, both teams, England are not as good as Australia, really. Especially in Australian conditions, Australia are better. Therefore, England have to play A, above themselves, and B, take every opportunity that they're offered. And they didn't take that key opportunity after lunch off Warner, which would have been a massive boost to them to get rid of Warner just after lunch on the second day. And then just the other things like Jack Leach not bowling particularly well, bowling a lot at left-handers, which obviously he's not particularly good at, or left-arm spinners in general aren't as effective against the likes of Travis Head. And later on, he had to bowl it to Alex Carey and then Mitchell Starc. The bowlers were not quite on it. I think Mark Wood was outstanding. Robinson pretty good, though he faded a bit. Chris Wokes wasn't quite at his best, I don't think. So, and obviously the batsman, Rory Burns getting out first ball of the game, Hamid not lasting that long, Joe Root getting a duck in the first thing, you know, all those kind of things. England needed everything to go well to have a chance of winning this test, and they squandered opportunities and didn't play their best cricket. You could say Australia forced them into mistakes. Well, that's true as well.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point, Yoz. In these conditions, in Australia, especially at the Gabba, England, not quite good enough. Not quite as good as Australia.
Well, it might not be feeling like a beer right now, but Beer 52 is a craft beer supplier like no other, sending experts all around the world to find the best beer available anywhere on this planet. And in true Christmas spirit, Beer 52 are offering listeners of this podcast 10 free beers. All you have to do is go to www.beer52.com/cricket and cover £5.95 for postage to claim your free case. Each month, Beer 52 members receive a new case, usually from a different part of the world. Members have had beers from more than 40 countries across 5 continents. If dark beer is not your thing, stout or whatever, simply choose the light option instead of a mixed case. And as well as the delicious beer, you'll receive Ferment magazine, which delves into the beers, breweries and themes of beer making around the world. And you'll also get 2 delicious snacks to wash down with the beer. So your appetite and thirst is quenched all in one go. And it might just take your mind off the cricket. Go to beer52.com/cricket. And after claiming your free case, you'll join the monthly beer club, which is £24 a month. No minimum commitment. Pause or cancel any time.
One of the really bizarre things that happened on the fourth day, those people watching the television pictures, not just in Australia, but all around the world, well, you just lost them all. They just went. They just vanished. And it was not a short disappearance of the pictures as well. It was quite a long one. It lasted for something like 30, 40 minutes, which is extremely rare. I mean, sometimes the satellite feed goes down and someone in the studio has to pick up for 30 seconds or a minute or something like that. But you expect to get them back. But this was a power outage at the game. And one of the generators, they couldn't get the generators working as well, the sort of backup generators. So, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, people in Australia as well, Channel 7, Fox, they just lost their pictures. And because lots of the commentary team were actually not at the ground because of the difficulty of getting into Queensland, they were completely in the dark. Commentary teams in Melbourne and Sydney, really sort of bizarre situation. I mean, what was it like back in the UK?
It was interesting. It shows how reliant we are on TV coverage and how outstanding the TV coverage of the game is when it's all working. And the only coverage in England was BT Sport's lone camera, which is mainly there to interview Glenn McGrath on the pitch side, in between sessions. And it was a sort of low angle, deep extra cover. Actually, it was quite interesting because Alistair Cook made the point in the BT studio that it almost showed you how fast the bowling is. You often forget that when you're watching from behind the arm because you can see the ball going all the way down and you haven't got that sense of pace quite the same. But when you're watching Mitchell start from deep extra cover, charging into bowl and slinging them down and Stokes shouldering arms and the ball flying through chest high, it does bring home how quick the bowling is. And there was one ball that Stokes sort of flinched at and it whacked him on the glove and went away on the leg side. And you're sort of thinking, wow, I want to watch this from behind the sofa. It was a bit like the coverage of cricket from the 1930s or something. You expected the voice to say, and in came Jardine to help his team get through to the close of play. Actually, I quite enjoyed it. For 10 minutes, it was all right. And then after that, when you couldn't really see what had happened, you saw a magnificent drive from Jos Buttler, but no idea whether he missed the ball completely or hit it to extra cover straight to the field it went for four because you couldn't see the umpire. So we were a bit in the dark, but it was quite interesting and it basically just reminded you that how good TV coverage is generally.
The other thing to say as well, of course, is that in a way, nothing dramatic happened while they lost the TV pitch. I mean, you had a morning where 7 wickets went down for whatever, 80-odd runs. But actually, I don't think a wicket fell at any moment. Imagine if that had been a really crucial passage of play. Imagine if it had been 30 to win with 3 wickets left. I mean, the frustration among viewers would have been immense, wouldn't it? Or not just in Australia, but all around the world as well. In a way, the sort of TV companies got a bit lucky because a wicket didn't fall. There wasn't a drop catch or anything contentious, and they sort of half got away with it, and you're able to see all the wickets and those people that stayed up. I imagine it's possible that people took a view after England lost those first 2 wickets because that sort of felt like the end of it, didn't it? When Root nicked off after Milan had gone, you thought, well, Root's still there, possibly England could build a decent total and try to put pressure on Australia on a pitch that might be a little bit up and down. But once Root was out, you just thought that was it. And you could all, you here in Australia, you know, you're trying to keep people interested with the radio commentary. You're hoping people stay with you through the night. You know that people sort of wake up at various times during the night, but you want people to stay with you. It was a Friday night, you know, not long before Christmas. You want people to stay with you. As soon as Root nicked off, you could almost hear the sound of everyone turning their radios off and thinking, that's it, here we go again. And off to bed. So, that's what it felt like here. What about the rest of the series then, Yoz? We've said, we've made the point that this Australia side, if they play well, pound for pound, look better than this English side. I mean, England do have Stokes back, and they do have a bit of firepower in the bowling, and they got Root in golden form. He's had a magnificent year. But they've got probably too many holes in their side, too many problems. What happens from here? I mean, are we looking at another heavy defeat? We both said at the start, didn't we? 3-1, 3-1 to Australia. It felt about right at the start. There were a few uncertainties because of all the build up, and Australia changing their captain. But is it after what you've seen of the first Test match? Does it feel like here we go again? 4-0 last time, 5-0 the time before.
No, actually, I don't think it does, and I think England will be lifted by the idea of a day-night test match with a pink ball in Adelaide. Anderson and Broad, their two crackerjack fast bowlers, will be back in the side and will be enjoying the prospect of bowling with the pink ball. It's a bit like Cummins and Hazelwood having a go at England at the Gabba and really salivating because they know it's in their domain. That's the kind of conditions they enjoy. By contrast, this is going to be England's sorts of conditions playing at Adelaide with a pink ball. So I think that will give England some optimism. I mean, I worry about that they're batting generally still. I worry about Rory Burns. I think Hamid actually acquitted himself okay, but Burns just looks to me a bit vulnerable. And apart from Root. And actually, Milan played well, didn't he? So, those numbers 3 and 4 will give England some confidence going into that second test match. Stokes and Pope haven't really made runs yet. I mean, Stokes had a disappointing match, but then I suppose we should be relatively forgiving because he hasn't played any cricket for 6 months. So he'll come back. He'll contribute at some point. I don't think England need to be too gloomy. I think they could easily come back and make it 1-1, honestly. And especially, Australia may well lose Hazelwood and Warner. So, in a way, England might come into the second test stronger and Australia weaker.
Yeah, well, that's a very optimistic view. What I would counter that with is that Australia have won every pink ball test match they've played at Adelaide. So every day-night game they've won. So their record there is good. So you might say that it favours England a bit, and there is some encouragement there. And I remember Jimmy Anderson bowling Australia out in the second innings last time round. And England getting, they got within 100, didn't they? They lost about 120 runs. And there was some excitement on the last day because they wanted about 180 with 6 wickets left. But they ultimately lost the game. So there might be some encouragement there for Anderson and Broad. But Australia are good with the pink ball under lights at Adelaide. So there's that. They'll be thinking, well, they think they're good, but actually we're better. There is some possible encouragement for England in that Josh Hazlewood's got this slight side strain. It's a strange one, actually, because he only bowled 8 overs yesterday. And people thought, well, that's a bit strange. Australia pressing for victory. And he did have a scan. And they did find what they call was a slight side strain. But he did bowl on the fourth day, bowled 6 overs. So, you know what it's like if you've got a side injury as a bowler, you've got to be really careful. So it may well be. Yeah. That Australia have to err on the side of caution. Pat Cummins was saying in his post-match press conference, that we do need to look after him. Otherwise, he could be out of the series. He plays in Adelaide and it goes. You'll be out of the series with a side strain, won't you? It's back to back to back, and you know what that's like as a pace bowler. You've got to be really careful.
I wouldn't risk it. I really wouldn't. If there's any kind of niggle like that, by bowling in a test match, you're just going to make it worse, aggravate it, could be out for a couple of months. So I wouldn't risk Hazelwood in the second test. I think he needs to rest and make sure it's all right for the Boxing Day test match in Melbourne, and which means, I guess, a Jai Richardson or something like that will come in. And that just gives England a little bit of optimism because Hazelwood is outstanding. He just never gives anything to the batsman at all. He's at you constantly. And, that, I think, will be some relief to England to have somebody else to face instead.
Except that Jai Richardson has taken 23 Sheffield Shield wickets at 13. But I take
your
point.
Can you stop arguing with me, please? Can you stop coming up with relevant facts?
Well, but you're right. I mean, Hazlewood's a class bowler, isn't he? And, you know, England will be encouraged if he's not there. I think that's definite. But Richardson is a decent young bowler as well, who's very capable of bowling well with the pink ball and, you know, just taking Australia forward as well. You know, he'll have something to prove. But, yeah, Hazlewood not there. Yeah, a little bit towards England, but I still think they've got a, you know, a really big task ahead of them. And, it, you know, it becomes a massive game for them, doesn't it? If they go 2-0 down with three to play and you have to, you know, you have to win the series to regain the Ashes, I mean, then it just becomes, you know, you're almost into snooker territory then, aren't you, really? Well, they came up with a snooker maximum in the first innings, 147.
That's, a good segue, that.
Yeah, but yeah. In the next three games, they would just about need snookers to regain the Ashes. The last test will be in Hobart. So if England can sort of stay in the series, I mean, it's a big if, then you think, well, Hobart, you know, that again, that in theory might bring their bowlers into it a bit. A day-night game in Hobart, you know, can be quite chilly in the evening. You know, you think it might nip around there as well, but it's a long haul to get there and still be in the series. Sorry to be so gloomy.
I think it should be double or quits. I think, you know, if England go 3-0 down, then they should play the last two tests at double, especially with the last test in Hobart. It should be double or quits, really, like you do in golf when you're, well, you know, sort of 5-0 down or something.
Well, I did suggest on air to Stuart Clark today, the former Australia bowler. I said, you know, in those old days when they used to play 22 against 11, you remember, you know, the 19th century, it was the, you know, the 11 of England against the 22 of whatever, Victoria. New South Wales. I said, well, Australia should be allowed to have one innings and England should be allowed to have two. And that was just at the point where England were about to wipe off the deficit and go ahead. So, yeah, so under that, England won this test match, I think, by 3 wickets. They, for some strange reason, and they played on and allowed England's last 3 wickets to fall, and Australia went out to bat to chase 20. But actually, England won this test match by 3 wickets under sort of like old rules. Oh dear! We're trying to find some positives. There were one or two positives. England did bowl well at times, and there was that Milan and Root partnership. But yeah, it's a decent Australian side, and we said it at the start of the series that, you know, they've got some good play, and Cameron Green as well. I gave him a bit of a punt, didn't I, before the test match? Out first ball. But he picked up 2 good wickets today, and including the big one of Joe Root. And, you know, he's taken 3 wickets now, so he's off and running in the bowling stakes. He looks a really good young cricketer. The other thing about Cameron Green as well, he's massive. And he's got these huge long arms. So when he fields in the gully, it's like having 3 gully fielders because he's got such a big reach to his
wingspan.
Left.
Wingspan.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Big wingspan to left and right. Ben Stokes probably needs to join in, doesn't he, Oz? You did mention that just now. You know, disappointing game for him, but you're right. I mean, he's had so little cricket, as indeed have so many of the England players. But Stokes, 14 and 5 in this test match, and also 0 for 65 with the ball from 12 overs. It's a strange dismissal.
And crucially, of course, he doesn't field at slip either at the moment. No. He's looking after his finger, so he doesn't get into the slips. Opportunities, though, for new Ashes heroes to be made in the next 4 test matches. And I mention that because we've created this website, ashesheroes.com, to sell or offer for sale a series of Ashes Heroes NFTs, non-fungible tokens, digital art. You can join our website and have a look at those pieces of digital art and actually collect them yourself. It's a bit like a digital version of Panini stickers. And you know, it's 60 years since the Panini sticker was first invented, those football stickers, football cards that you used to collect and stick in a book. So this is the digital version of them, the Ashes Heroes NFTs. Go to ashesheroes.com and have a look at those. We've got Monty Panesar actually for sale at the moment, and he was an Ashes hero because of that amazing last wicket stand in 2009 to hold off Australia at Cardiff with Jimmy Anderson. And just one other thing to say, and that is, looking ahead to the second test match, we have Mike Hussey, Mr. Cricket, in our virtual cricket club on Monday night at 8:30 p.m. direct from Adelaide, where I know, Simon, you will be as well. So we're going to hear from Mike Hussey, his take on the first test, looking ahead to the second test as well, and talking about his cricket career as well. You can ask him a direct question if you join us in our virtual cricket club at worldsbestcricketclub.com. And you'll be
Excellent.
There, won't you?
I hope so. I haven't looked at the time differences and the time zones yet, and what time of the morning that is in Adelaide. I know Mike Hussey's getting up. Well, I'll endeavour to be with you there as
not
as
that
well,
early.
Okay, all right. Okay, I'm being told off now. And we'll be back with more when we review the first day of the Adelaide Test match. Remember, it is a pink ball game, so it's all more in the UK time zone, more play in the UK time zone, so you won't have to stay up through the night to listen to England's misery. You can just follow it as it happens early in the morning. So I think we're about 4 o'clock start UK time. So anyway, we'll review the day's play around about lunchtime UK time. So we'll speak to you on this feed then. Goodbye for now.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.